sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Malaysian airline crash spooks markets. Earnings coming in ahead of expectations, economics falling short. We have all this and much more on episode number 373 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, welcome. This is Andrew Horowitz, and this is the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I got to tell you, we're going to make this a little bit short, this show. I got all sorts of issues going on here. We got some of my system blew out, so you're probably listening and wondering why I don't sound as incredibly sexy as I usually do. Now, just, you know, with that kind of good voice all there, we had to kind of substitute a couple of equipments due to, I think it may have been a lightning strike or something in the area. We got a surge, even though I have all these surge protectors on. Something went wrong with the amp and the compressor and all that good stuff on the system. So we're kind of having it in for repair right now. And in addition to that, we're moving our office. So that is causing a bit of a problem in terms of the information, in terms of at the recording studio location. So right now it's a pretty bare bones operation, but we're going to talk about some of the things that we need to know about for this week coming up. Next week, I think we have Frank Curzio, because we need to get back to some of the basics and talk about what's going on in the markets around the world and how, in fact, we can actually play this, particularly when it comes to the small caps, which have been taking quite a beating lately. As a matter of fact, small caps on Thursday, when we heard about not only the Malaysian airline crash and the shooting down of that particular airline, and then the additional information that we saw with regard to Israel and Gaza and the ground invasion going on there, well, small caps fell another 2%, and that was quite problematic. You did see that the markets overall, whether it was the NASDAQ, the U.S. S&P 500, and the Dow down 160 points on that news. And this is an interesting situation, because we did see just a day later, just one day later, 24 hours later, markets seem to recover about 75% of what was lost in the day before. Now, what makes for something like that? I think we have to talk about this for a second and discuss the market mood, mentality, and the overall trend, and kind of separate each of those, because there's differences in what's happening there. Clearly the trend, we're in a bit of a consolidation, but yet trend higher mode when it comes to major markets and indices. We have earnings season that is here, and clearly there was some better numbers from many companies, particularly the big companies, came out with some better numbers. We'll talk about that in a second. But yet at the same time, we saw that there was some misses on companies as well, or better yet, seeing that earnings is slowing down in terms of growth. Now, what happened? So coming into Thursday, things seemed to be okay. Everything was firing on all cylinders. And then all of a sudden, boom, right? We see that this real problematic situation where, who knows the situation between Russia and U.S. and how that's going to play out. And we see that there is a concern around the globe due to the geopolitical unrest, not only in the area of Ukraine and Russia, but also now in Israel. The ground invasion in the Gaza is causing some concern as well. Now, obviously, the unknown about the Malaysian air crash, what happened, who did it, why it happened, and all of that really played very harshly into the markets, because there was a bit of an unknown. We saw that gold and silver up about 2% on the day, markets down about 1.5% on the day, and ended on the lows, continued to move lower overnight with the futures. But then we saw that the correction was over. And this is the mentality of the market right now. It's buy any dip, no matter what the dip is. It could be 3 points on the S&P, buy it. It could be 1%, because the potential for some kind of a global geopolitical unrest is blooming and blossoming, buy it. And money is coming into these areas, and it's coming in pretty strong. Why is that? Well, you got the trend that also has been showing that it's in an uptrend in general over time. The longer-term trend is clearly still up. But yet, at the same time, there is a lot of money that is still involved in the system. Now, you may be saying, well, wait a minute. You got the Fed, who clearly telegraphed recently that they're going to be pulling out of some of their financing, their stimulus, their bond buying. Shouldn't that be a concern? Well, yeah, it is. But at the same time, you do see that they did put a caveat on it. When Janet Yellen was talking about this, she said, well, you know, we are going to be probably stopping the quantitative easing program in October, but yet we leave the door open in the event that we need to have additional bond purchases in the future. I mean, talk about never shutting down the printing press. And with that, markets said, okay, well, that's not so bad. Realizing that the Fed stands ready at any time to really come to the rescue of markets and the economy. Now, unfortunately, there has been a lot more benefit when it comes to markets and the wealth effect with the Fed stimulus plan, especially the latest round of their quantitative easing, as compared to what's going on in the economy. Sure, housing has come back a bit. Employment is clearly much better right now. But we're starting to see a lot of that slow down. You're starting to see that, for example, last week, the housing numbers, very weak compared to expectations. That was a concern in the latter part of the week. The leading indicators on Friday missed. We also saw that the consensus of consumers, their confidence level, was also weaker in the latest University of Michigan on Friday. 81.5 or so from 83 expectations, down from the previous month as well. But again, that didn't deter markets. Usually you'll see that consumer confidence has some effect on retail stocks and the consumer staples, etc., but it didn't have any effect on Friday. Friday was all about getting back what was lost on Thursday. Friday was all about the buying programs that were in place on the algorithms that just said, hey, you know what? Markets are down. You might as well pick it back up. It really has nothing to do with the economics anymore. Fundamentals in terms of the earnings, sure. We are seeing that earnings are better on many stocks, although I want to talk about IBM in a second. You know, I have quite the discussion usually on that, and they didn't disappoint me in their disappointment overall. Google came in a little bit better, and we did see the banks show up a bit better. Some of the transportation as well did better last week, so that was good to see. There was some definitely concerning points. Some of the casino stocks from the lack of revenue that they saw in Macau in particular, due to the fact that China has been clamping down on some of the money transfers to the island. And that has put a little bit of a crimp in some of the earnings of the casino, multinational casino companies, particularly those in Macau, of course. But overall, I think that what's really going on here is just simply a rotation in and out, risk on, risk off, but more so that there is a fear of missing the next rally. And putting aside the geopolitical situation, I think John Markman a number of months ago put it really well when he was on the show, and he said that, you know, here in the United States, we really don't worry about what goes on around the world. We don't really care that much. Now, sure, if it affects us, we do. It affects our economy. It affects earnings. It affects companies. It affects people. Absolutely. But really, if you take this very cold and very dry look at the Malaysian airline situation, unless we get involved and start really taunting Russia with sanctions that will somehow backfire and really do damage to our economy, why should we care? I'm not saying we don't care, but I'm saying that that's the mentality. The mentality is that, hey, you know what? It's not happening here. It doesn't affect us here. And if it doesn't affect us here, we don't care about that. So I think that that's what's going on in the markets right now. We've also seen that historically over the last however many years, these kind of geopolitical events, even with the banking situation in Portugal and Banco Espírito is not able to meet their obligations and they're looking for protection against their creditors. And this started in the beginning of the week last week, and there was a concern there. And it ended the week with the realization that they cannot pay. And as such, this should be a red flag that the banking industry in Europe is not fixed, particularly in Portugal and Spain. No matter what they are saying at the ECB, no matter how much money they put into this, no matter what they're really doing, it doesn't seem to fix the situation. And that's concerning. But does it affect us here? Well, it may affect some of our banks if they have also some interest in the banks that are having problems overseas. It could, in fact, affect us in that if you really get this to an extreme level, what will happen is that the banking situation in Europe could bleed out into the United States, into Asia, etc., just like the U.S. banking situation cracked the rest of the world. Now, Portugal is a small country. Their banks are small compared to the banks here, clearly. So right now, if this is a one-off, if this is just an isolated incident, well, what's to worry about? And in fact, more importantly, I think the mentality right now is until we see definitive evidence that it is affecting us here in the United States, then just disregard it. Just disregard it entirely. Because until we see that either the Fed is totally out of the picture and not going to be supportive, or if we see that there is an actual effect by some of these on our companies and our economy, then you might as well just keep buying. Just keep buying. Now, what was really interesting was that we did see that pop on gold. Remember, I've been talking about this for a while. Now, it did pop by about 2% after it was down a couple of days, and then Friday came around, and they knocked it down 1%. And like, there's nothing going on, no risk. Meanwhile, gold did stay above the 1,300 threshold, which is an important psychological level and technical level for gold. And silver also stayed above its important key levels. But the market's return of 1% that was an absolute uptrend, not on a lot of volume on Friday, even though it was options expiration. Now, on Thursday, we saw about a 50% increase in overall volume on the selling. Now, traditional technicals would tell you that you look at volume and you look at price action to see where the players are playing, right? Are they on the side of the buying? Are they on the side of the selling? In other words, if you have several days of up on small volume, but several days down on large volume, you could see that the net result was that more was being sold, per se, or more shares were being turned over on the downside, or vice versa. And you can get a good read on the potential for the institutions and hedge funds and big boys out there playing in the field of stocks, how much they are actually distributing or accumulating. I was very surprised that the option expiration on Friday didn't show a significant amount of increase over where we should have seen it. Now, there was some increase, by the way, but it was still light for an options day. It was definitely a little bit heavier than the day before, which you'd expect with a 50% increase on the overall volume. But again, it tells you that it was very tentative selling and there wasn't a lot of resistance there. Now, we did see the night before that Google came out with better earnings, and that was pretty much all that I could say good about the earnings that we saw from the major companies. IBM had the ninth consecutive quarter of reducing and lower revenues. But magically, their EPS stood up, and it held up better than expectations. And again, a lot of that has to do with the incredible engineering of the financials that IBM does. IBM, between selling off companies, between buying back enormous amounts of shares, have shrunk their overall shares outstanding, and therefore been effective in pretty much navigating whatever EPS they want on their shares. And as such, they're also good at holding up the share value. I can't even imagine what the actual value of IBM would be, currently at about 191 or so per share. But what it would be if they didn't do all of this? With nine consecutive quarters, we're talking about 2.5 years, right, of declining revenue. If they didn't take back all of these shares and adjust and increase the EPS due to that, I think there would have been a very significant amount of losses that you would see here. But you can't see them unless you dig down. And the question then remains, well, if the average guy is holding on or owning IBM, and looking at, for example, the headline numbers and seeing that, okay, they look all right, they beat on earnings, okay, I'll keep on holding the shares. What are the institutions doing? What are the analysts doing? What are the people who know what's going on? Are they just following along like sheep? That's what it seems like to me. That's what Friday felt like. Friday felt like, hey, it was down yesterday, we got to move it back up today. Now, it was an inside day if you look at the actual range of the returns on Friday compared to Thursday. It was an inside day, meaning that we opened up a little bit higher than the close the day before, and we closed lower than the high of the previous day. An inside day. Not a good technical level. Also considered some consolidation just on those 2 days there. But we'll have to see what happens next week, because next week we are going to see a dramatic amount of earnings come out. Somewhere around 15% or so, or possibly even more, of the S&P will be reporting. The S&P 500. I believe on Wednesday or Thursday, about 10% that day will be reporting their earnings. We have some major companies coming in that we have to look at from, for example, Facebook in the social media space to Caterpillar, which gives us a real good view of what's happening in construction and building and infrastructure growth around the world. Now, Caterpillar has been moving up very nicely on their stock price over the last several quarters after having some abysmal numbers about a year ago. But we'll see. You saw that China had a bit of a loosening of their policy to try to pump up their economy a bit. And maybe, just maybe, with the railroads that they seem to build all the time and the infrastructure development that's going on there, as well as the construction that we've been seeing around the United States, possibly Caterpillar will see some better numbers and some continuation of their growth that they've seen for some time. I wouldn't be surprised if they increase their dividend and do additional share buybacks just to keep the price of the stock propped up. So we're going to watch that and all the majors that come out. Now, one of the things I want to share with you is we have been working back and forth with GoPro on the short side. Last week, I think I mentioned that we were short. We covered that position for about a 13% gain. And luckily, because the next day, there was an upgrade to the stock and it was up 15%. Then it tried to move up about 4.5%, 5%. The following day, we hit the short again at that point in the 41.5 range or so. And added to that slightly. Stock was down again after that. So we're still holding on to a net positive. Really, the range is about 42 and change to about 37, I would say. You can try to play that range, see what happens. If it, of course, does break up miraculously above, we'll call it 43. That's where the stock may break out and start continuing to move. But considering the potential fundamentals and of the stock, as well as the ease of entry and the lack of significant barriers to entry in this particular company and what they do, hardware company, slapping a camera to your head. And while they may come out with better technology and better cameras and some interesting Wi-Fi and who knows what they're going to come out with, but really, what's the lifespan and life expectancy of this? I mean, it's a fad. Now, the fads sometimes move pretty hard. But I got to tell you something. How many cameras can you have? You have your camera on your phone of some sort, right? You have that. You may have a traditional camera, whether it's a point and shoot or an SLR or something like that. But just how many cameras is somebody really willing to buy? Maybe there's something I'm missing here, but it really looks like that the GoPro is an interesting thing that you may want to buy just to check it out. But how many times are you going to really strap that on and try to use that for, some kind of an action shot? I don't know. It seems to me that this is something that people will try, and then it kind of gets old. Anyway, what else do we have to talk about here? Let's see. Okay, so some of the economics from last week, we saw that the housing numbers were questionable in terms of what expectations were and how they're doing. I would say that when we look at the housing numbers, we have to realize that they're going to be choppy. They're going to be noisy. There's no question about that. But how much of the housing numbers are tied to multifamily establishments, apartment buildings? Very much the same conversation that when you look at the jobs numbers that we saw recently, we noticed a lot of part-time employment, temporary. Now, apartments, they may be condos, they could be rentals, but again, those are a bit different than individual houses because you do have a good amount of rentals involved in the multifamily dwellings or multi-housing dwellings, if you will. So we are continuing with a short position on a couple of the home builders, thinking that when interest rates go up, it's going to start slowing down. And in fact, it may have started slowing down already after the rush came in the beginning of the year looking for a much better interest rate environment in terms of higher. And people said, you know what? We're going to get in now. We're going to get this thing done. We're going to make sure that we have locked in our mortgage, locked in our housing, because if they go up, oh my. Now, a lot of people, individuals, analysts, economists, everybody thought at the beginning of this year that, hey, you know what? With an improving economy, we're going to see interest rates really moving higher. Now, for whatever the reason, whether there's concern about markets, whether there's just the idea that the government's going to keep on backing the bonds, whether it's just a good place to put things from an international basis where sovereign wealth funds and governments are buying up U.S. debt, whatever it may be, and the continuation of QE that we still have a chunk going into the quantitative easing program on a monthly basis. Bond prices, I mean, they're still extremely, extremely high. They kicked up pretty well, as a matter of fact, on Thursday when we saw that the geopolitical concerns heat up. But yet at the same time, on Friday, we didn't see them really take a big beating. They were down, but there wasn't a big beating that you would think would happen. Like gold was up 2%, but down a whole percent the day after. So there's still some concern out there. And for whatever reason, there is the desire to buy bonds at these incredibly low interest rates right now. The idea then is that we're not going to worry about a very quick and painful ride up on the bond interest rates. That's funny if you think about it. How could it not? But it's defying all predictions of moving up, even on a healthier employment situation and on an economy that, in general, has been doing okay. Now, there has been a lot of talk about the idea that this 3% GDP that we're going to hit this year is going to, you know, it's going to drop. It's not going to be there. The downgrades are coming. We saw that the first quarter was horrible, a snapback, yes, due to a lot of inventory issues in the second quarter. But the question remains, you know, how are we going to really play out for the rest of the year? It would seem to me that maybe a 2% number, possibly sub 2% number, is really what's going to be the case. And maybe that is tying back to the reason why bonds have been moving up again. The thought that the Fed will continue to be there, and Janet Yellen, who is the dove's dove, who seems to not worry about any of the PPI, CPI numbers in the future, and thinking that inflation is under control, and there won't be an outbreak or a fast move of inflation anytime soon. So that's kind of the summary of what's going on. You know, we have that when we see that people are buying, they buy bonds and stocks. Usually, it seems to be a lot of excess money, and that's the key to looking at how much liquidity is in the system. So it's not just rotating from stocks to bonds, bonds to stocks. It's rotating in and out, but very quickly. And if you were surprised about what happened on Friday, the quick revival of markets, I think next week's going to be the key to all of this. I mentioned that this week was going to be the key to a lot of how the earnings season moves, and I don't think we got a good read on that because we had some geopolitical issues and some Fed speak in the beginning of the week and a lot of economics that week. This week, I think we're going to get some more clarity. And as I mentioned, it's going to be a short show today due to the hiccups we have on technology on our side here, but we will make it up next week with a discussion with Frank Curzio. So we're going to leave it there and then come back with a review of all the earnings and the outlook from companies. We have a lot to talk about with Frank Curzio and the outlook for small caps next week. So it's a short show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.